Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. We react to a wild and wacky trade deadline week. Jaren Jackson Jr. is a Utah Jazz. Anthony Davis is a Washington Wizard. James Harden is officially a Cleveland Cavaliers. We give our takeaways from those deals and others. A little bit later, we get into winners and losers. And as a parent, I had a little bit of a Miami Heat rant. So if you want to fast forward through that, you can. Please don't do that, actually. But winners and losers, we got teams and we got players. Who feels better or worse about their situations following the deadline? And then we preview the unrivaled weekend. We have some fascinating matchups, no Sunday games because of the Super Bowl, but we still have fun weekend matchups. And as a media voter, I got to give in my own personal standings of the 1v1 tournament. So I revealed my picks and Steve critiqued the matchups that I had. So we're going to have some fun with that. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We're part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Ready to talk trades. I know, Nikias Duncan, this is your favorite episode of the year. So we get to come and break down all the trades that have taken place. We made it through the trade deadline. Yes, let's go.
All right. Well, debatable about my favorite episode, but this is a fun time of year. Once we get past the deadline, we get to account for literally everything, kind of take stock of the league and see what happens. We have had a very hectic week, Steve. It's very funny. We kept the Tuesday show, or we start the Tuesday show, talking about James Harden potentially on the move, Darius Garland potentially on the move. We finished the recording. We get Jaren Jackson Jr. It's like, oh, well, this is not what I had on the bingo card happening this week. And that kind of signaled to me, oh, we're about to have a lot going on this week. Because there just didn't feel like there was a ton of smoke around Memphis selling off everything. There was naturally the conversation around John Morant. He ends up not getting moved, but we'll get there. But let's start with Jaren Jackson Jr. being moved to the Utah Jazz, Steve. That deal, overall, it is Jaren Jackson Jr. going to the Utah Jazz along with Vince Williams Jr., Jock Landale, who was later moved in a deal to the Atlanta Hawks, John Conchar, also going to the Utah Jazz. For the Memphis Grizzlies, Walter Clayton Jr., first-round pick from this past draft, Taylor Hendricks, Kyle Anderson, George Niang, who has since been waived, a 2027 first-round pick, another 2027 first-round pick, and a 2031 first-round pick. Aside from the general surprise of Jaren being moved, I honestly really like the fit. And I like what this kind of means or could mean for Utah Jazz basketball. I think skilled size feels like all the rage right now. And if you are telling me the Jazz can be walking into next season with Lauri Markkanen, 7-footer that can knock down shots from everywhere, has improved as a driver, better foul drawer, et cetera. Jaren Jackson Jr., who can knock down shots from the perimeter, can post up, can drive. If they bring back Walker Kessler, who's slated to be a restricted free agent this offseason, so Utah can offer their own deal. Outside team can send something. Utah has the ability to match. If you're telling me you're walking in 3-5 with that group, I'm excited about what that offense can look like with the way that Will Hardy uses his bigs. I'm excited about what this defense could be when you have that kind of rim protection between Jaren and Walker Kessler if he's back. The collective size with those three, in addition to Ace Bailey if he's at the two, that's a lot of size to insulate Keyonte George, who has had like an all-star type leap this season. Terrific offensive player. The defense, you know, we can talk about it. I like that Utah added this kind of talent, and they also did so without giving up an Ace Bailey, without giving up a Kyle Filipowski, without giving up any of their top-tier assets. It feels like a nice threading of the needle for them. What did you think of the Utah deal for Jaren Jackson Jr.?
Well, you covered a majority of the bulk of the thoughts, but I think for me it signaled the end of Utah saying, okay, we need to add talent to what we've built here. We don't have to be as patient anymore. We believe in this. We now need to see what it looks like with more talent. And so instead of, okay, we're going to trade Lauri to get pieces and try and kick the can down the road. No. We're going to bring Jaren Jackson Jr. into this, and now let's see where it goes. And so I think the biggest thing for me is being able to get a type of talent like this in quote-unquote pre-agency. We probably wouldn't be able to get a free agent to come to Utah right now. We acquire them via trade, and now we see what happens. And so I think for me, I'm excited about what it looks like offensively for Jaren Jackson Jr. I think Coach Will Hardy's done a fantastic job of being able to use, bigs in different ways. Lauri Markkanen playing next to two bigs. Lauri Markkanen being used in different ways as a screener, flying off ball screens. And so how much are you able to unlock things for Jaren Jackson Jr.? We've seen him have success in the past in those type of actions. So do we now see his drives pop a little bit more? Do we now see him used in different ways, being able to play him at the five? And so if you keep Walker Kessler, you should have a big on the court at all times. How does that open up your lineup versatility? And I think, again, it's one of those things where we see, to your point, hey, we're not giving up a ton of what made us this to get Jaren Jackson Jr. So we're adding to what we believe our core is, which I think is a big thing for Utah. So me, it's more just signaling, okay, we need to make a move now. We need to make a move to kind of knock on the door of the Western Conference, and that's going to do it. I was more surprised that that was the person that got traded from Memphis more than anything else.
We're going to get into our actual trade deadline winners and losers a little bit later in the pod. But for Ja Morant specifically, would he be a winner or a loser of the deadline? Because I think he wants to stay in Memphis. He's been pretty clear about that. But also, Memphis seemed very willing to move him if they got any sort of good offer. They did not receive that. And now it is Ja Morant, a bunch of young talent surrounding him. No Jaren Jackson Jr. anymore. We're a few months removed from Desmond Bane being traded. How do we designate Ja in this specifically?
He's a winner. And so if you're going to say that we're willing to trade Ja Morant, and Ja Morant's like, actually, I don't really want to leave, but it's cool, whatever. And then you trade Jaren and don't trade Ja. It's very clear what's happening here in Memphis as far as where you're pivoting. So yeah, Ja Morant's a winner. It's just going to be, where does he go in the offseason, in my eyes.
Okay, I got you. I think that's fair. I think the other, going back to Utah very quickly, the Jaren thing naturally intrigues me. He is the headliner in this. I think Utah also being able to add some solid role players around this and getting other youth in the building, like in particular, like having Vince Williams Jr. in this with what he's been able to do with Memphis this year, really good defender. You always kind of eye what the jumper is going to look like for him, but him taking on more playmaking duties earlier this year was something that caught me by surprise. A lot of that was naturally because of the injuries that Memphis was dealing with, but like he handled that pretty well. And so even as you're Utah, we're sending out a Walter Clayton Jr., we're sending out other perimeter talent, like Vince Williams can still like be a part of this. He is not the headliner, of course. That's going to be Keontae. It's going to be Ace. But the fact that they are able to add a talent like that, I think it's helpful. And I think to the Memphis side, you get three firsts out of this. We will see how valuable those firsts end up being. How intrigued are you by the young talent that they were able to receive in this deal, Steve? Because I'm like Walter Clayton Jr. in particular is where I'm just like, huh, there is a real shot-making talent here. And I think he could fit in with those guards that they already have. And in general, like what Tomas Isalo wants to do offensively with the tempo, with the off-ball movement, I think he slots in pretty nicely.
Well, I think Walter Clayton Jr. and Taylor Hendricks feel like Hallmark Grizzly type acquisitions where you're young, you have talent, and let's see if we can get the most out of it. They have generally, if you are someone who was a lottery pick or a high draft pick and, hey, it didn't work out, come over here. Let's see what you got. So I do like that aspect of it. Again, it's going to be interesting to see what the full pivot is once you move on from Ja Morant. But I think if you're Memphis, you're trying to get as much talent in the building and then evaluate who's going to be on for the next portion of this, but you're a couple of years away from that part.
Understood. Just quickly on Taylor Hendricks, the defense or the potential versatility that he can provide on that front should be fun with this Memphis group. Excited to see what him plus Zach Edey looks like in the front court whenever Zach Edey makes his return. But I am intrigued. Let's stick with Western Conference All-Star Bigs being moved, Steve. Anthony Davis is a Washington Wizard, and we're not far removed from the Wizards making the swing for Trae Young. And the thing that I like from the Wizards' perspective, before getting into the on-court store, is similar to the Utah point that I had. We were able to make a swing for an all-star caliber big or an all-star caliber player in general without giving up any of our tier one assets. We didn't give up a premium pick in 2026. We didn't give up Alex Sarr. We didn't give up Keyshawn George. We didn't give up Trey Johnson, who we just drafted. And so the fact that you were able to make this kind of talent add, and not sure how much of Anthony Davis or Trae Young we're going to see this season, so you're not in jeopardy of, I would imagine, lowering the value of the first round pick that you have. You can now enter this offseason with Trae Young, with Anthony Davis, with the young talent that you have, a top tier pick in what is slated to be an incredible draft at the top at minimum. I like the swing from the Washington Wizards, Steve. Like, I think they were able to thread the needle nicely of adding talent without giving up stuff. And because they didn't give up stuff, you also don't have, at least I would imagine, you don't have the same pressure of, we have to get a 3 or 4 year deal done with Anthony Davis. We have to get a 3 or 4 year deal done with Trey Young. We can see what this looks like and then pivot again if we need to, because the commitment or just the asset allocation to bring those guys in wasn't super heavy. So, like, I like them being aggressive in this case.
Again, just like with Utah, Washington looked at what they've been doing and said enough. And when you're able to add talent at cost, like, think about, they turned Chris Middleton and CJ McCollum, who, if you kick the can down the road, you see all the transactions Washington did before that. But they turned those two into Anthony Davis and Trae Young. And why not? If those guys are going to be available at this cost point, why not see what they can do? And so if you're Washington, you walk into next year knowing we have Anthony Davis, knowing we have Trae Young, we have all of our young talent for the most part, and we're going to add another one to it. And so, especially when you look at the Eastern Conference and how open it's been this year for the taking and how competitive it's been this year and these teams going after it, if you're Washington, hey, we can get a piece of that next year. And we're going to have more pieces to add to it. And so we've kind of built the culture pieces. That's the thing in today's NBA. Everyone talks about culture. Eventually, you're going to trade a part of culture for talent. And Washington has now done that so they can try and put themselves in the conversation next year. And I think Anthony Davis and Trae Young together and pick and roll should be fun. Anthony Davis and Alex Starr together defensively should be fun. You can always split them up, so you should have a great five on the court at all times, even though both of them say they don't want to play five. I'm so sorry. I'm afraid I've got some bad news. But that's where you kind of have more of a direction. And so you can insulate Trae Young. You can have more of a runway or a hierarchy for your young players. Overall, it should give you a better feel and a better purpose going into next season to try and become a different team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I think just to bounce off what you said, Steve, it is both you're adding the talents of Trey and AD, but like because of how good they are and where they're good at, like there is a level of insulation there. There is a level of we're going to accentuate what these young guys do. With Alex Saar, we love the rim protection. We may not love the rebounding. Anthony Davis, very good rebounder and a darn good defender in and of itself, to your point about those two being potentially devastating defensively together when they're on the floor. With Trey Young, okay. We love having Trey Johnson handle. We love giving Keyshawn George playmaking reps, et cetera. What if they don't have to do as much of that? You still want them to have room to grow and to make those on-ball decisions. But the fact you have Trey Young who can just bake in and get you good stuff in the half court and can at least minimize some of the lulls that Washington's offense has where it feels a little directionless, I think that helps those guys. I guess more of a next year question. I like keep an eye on what the spacing of this team is going to look like. If we were looking at a potential starting lineup, let's say it's Trey Young, Trey Johnson, Keyshawn George, we go Anthony Davis and Alex Saar. Like, you are relying on Anthony Davis, who is likely going to still take a lot of jumpers. He will need to knock those down. You want a bounce back for Trey Young as a pull-up shooter in particular. So, like, I don't think it is a slam dunk fit-wise, but this is still, to your point, and pretty much what we both said, a really nice talent play for these guys. And I think that helps them take the next step next year. I guess the question that I would toss your way as we transition to Dallas, like, were you surprised there wasn't like a secondary move with them from this deal? Or do we expect anything with Chris Middleton? Like,
with who? Dallas?
Yeah.
No. Because
once I saw like the Chris Middleton expiring.
No, go ahead. There was no surprise. This is Cooper Flagg's team. We just need to make this move right here. And we'll see y'all later. This is Cooper Flagg's team.
It's absolutely his. Like this where I was a little surprised that they were actually able to get an AD thing done because it didn't feel like the market was super high for him compared to what his talent level and what his resume would say. And you bake in the health injuries on the health issues on top of that. But I guess for me, like I was expecting once the deal was announced, like, okay, this is big expiring money for Chris Middleton. If he is healthy and on the floor, like I think the shooting and some of the mid-range scoring should help and take a little bit of pressure off of Cooper Flagg, who, as you noted, Steve, this is just his team. This is 4 straight games of 30-plus points for Cooper Flagg. He has been incredible of the run. So I was just kind of waiting on, okay, does Chris get moved to a contender and you get another young piece in the building if you're Dallas or something like that? But they're sticking with it, so I'm curious to see what that portion of the program is going to look like. Was there any intrigue for you with any of the Washington assets going to Dallas? And anyone in particular that stands out to you that could help Cooper Flagg, I guess, beyond Chris Middleton?
No.
Okay. Fair. Fair enough. We're not getting Like, I think because, like, Daniel Gafford in particular has been in and out of the lineup, like, I'm curious to see what Marvin Bagley looks like in this spot, who has, like, quietly been solid in Washington. So, like, that part intrigues me. I'm excited to see how much of A.J. Johnson we actually get to see post All-Star break. I tweeted that out. We will see how where Jason Kidd lands on the freedom scale when it comes to A.J. But, like, we're talking about juicing the transition attack and helping Cooper Flagg get out and running a little bit more. Like, I think he can play a part into that. But as you mentioned, this was more about let's clear the decks in the front court. It is absolutely Cooper Flagg's team. This is phase one of building a coherent roster around him because he already seems ready to like win or at least complete for play-in / playoff contention next year. Let's stick with the theme of big, Steve. The Clippers already made a big move earlier in the week. James Harden, you are now a Cleveland Cavalier. Darius Garland, you're coming in. Ivica Zubats, you are now an Indiana Pacer. I didn't think the Clippers were going to pull the trigger, but it feels like when you add in Benedict Mathurin, Isaiah Jackson, you get two first-round picks. And of those two first, some odd protections, but you do have the chance to land a top-five pick in this year's draft with how the Indiana Pacers protected their 26th pick. 1-4, the Pacers keep it. 10-30, the Pacers keep it. If it lands in the 5-9 range, the Clippers get it. And I think in light of their own pick already being held by the Oklahoma City Thunder, we've talked about some of the doomsday scenarios with that pick throughout the year. It seems like a good bit of business. You get young talent in the room. You sell high on Ivica Zubats. You have the potential to land like a top five or top 10 pick in what could be a ridiculous draft. This feels like a good bit of business for the Los Angeles Clippers. Like, were you surprised at all by the deal being moved? What were some of your initial reactions to the deal?
I mean, I think the biggest thing for me was, okay, once you trade James Harden, if someone knocks on the door with the right offer for Zubac, it makes sense to go ahead and say, okay, well, we're not this anymore, so let's go ahead and pivot and go left. I think the biggest thing for me was the Pacers looking ahead and saying, okay, we didn't have Tyrese Haliburton this year. We had lost Miles Turner. And all of the bigs, no disrespect, that we have tried to use this year have not really worked. And we are here trying to use Johnny Furphy and Pascal Siakam together to try and create some sort of small ball juice. And I know Jay Huff has had his moments, but it just hasn't. They have not found the replacement. And so, okay, with Tyrese Haliburton coming back next year, let's check that off the box. We don't have to worry about that in free agency. We get Zubac, who will help them on both ends of the floor. Hasn't been a Zubac year this year, but I imagine within that system, it'll be interesting to see him being able to screen, him being able to roll, him being able to kind of compete defensively in a stronger sense. I think he fits what Indiana wants to do and can just provide a lot for that team. So I think them just going ahead and checking that off the box. Hey, we got Zoo. We got Tyrese coming back. We're going to land this pick in a very specific area and hopefully that lands something for us. And then we're back off to the races. So I think, again, just like I said with the Wizards, the Pacers, we're looking at this Eastern Conference. We're trying to get right back to business because everyone is competitive, and we're going to do that next year.
I'd say quickly to your point, this not being a Zubats year, and I agree with you, he has not hit the same notes on either end of the floor that he did last year where he was an all-defense guy. He was a fringe all-NBA guy. A non-Zubats year is still 14-11, 61% on twos, 3 offensive rebounds a game, nearly a block a game. This is the first time he's been under a block since the 2020-21 season, where he clearly was not this at this point. The fact that this is a down year kind of speaks to how good he is and how good he's become. And to your point, I am intrigued to see like what the pick and roll partnership between him and Tyrese Haliburton is going to look like next year. Because I think we had like a similar conversation about what Zubats plus Harden was going to look like once the Clippers made that deal. And I think just like the general pacing of things, like Tyrese is a different breed. He's not run 60 pick and roll a game guy. Like, what is the up and down effect that this is going to look like with Zubats? I'm curious to see how that develops. Defensively, he should just help a lot. On a very basic level, he's going to help them in possessions as a rebounder. I think the Pacers can certainly use that. And like watching him and Pascal Siakam together is going to be interesting from like a spacing perspective offensively, but defensively, they should be a lot of fun. I'm excited to see what this group looks like next year. And I think it is pretty stealthy on the Pacers' part. One, to get Zubats in the building for next year and beyond. Zubats is locked into the contract extension. And for them to be able to land those very specific protections on that pick means, like, if we're losing this, we're not, at the very least, we're not losing, like, Darren Peterson or Cam Boozer or A.J. DeBonsa or something like that. And if we have lottery luck, oh, my goodness, we are adding all this talent at the same time next year, in addition to whatever they do in free agency. So, like, I think it's a good bit of work for the Indiana Pacers. It certainly comes with some risk with that pick, but I like it. To the Clipper side, though, Steve, how do you feel about Benedict Mathurin in Los Angeles with this group?
I feel fine. I mean, if you lose James Harden and you're able to add Benedict Mathurin and Darius Garland, I think that's a plus for you. I mean, he's a young talent. He should fit into Ty Lue saying, hey, all of y'all should move the ball now. James Harden's not here anymore. And so if you're trying to kind of tear down or move in a different direction, you see what Benedict Mathurin has, see if you want to keep him on board, and then continue to kind of see what you can add towards it. So I have no beef with Benedict Mathurin to the Clippers.
I am intrigued. Like, this very much feels like a spotlight situation for him as the Clippers are pivoting, but they're not completely tearing this thing down. Like, I think when Darius Garland comes back, he has shown he's an all-star talent. Kawhi Leonard continues to play at an extremely high level right now, so there's still very much a play-in or on the super high end, like a low playoff push for the Clippers this year. But I want to see how Benedict Mathurin develops in the non-scoring areas. Like, that's kind of been my big thing with him with Indiana overall. I know he can drive. I know he can get buckets that way. Where does the three-point shot land? Where does the playmaking land? Where does the defense land? And I think watching him with the Pacers this year, one of the early intrigue areas for me was him taking on some tougher perimeter assignments defensively. Wasn't always great, but like the fact that he was garnering those and giving effort on that front. It's like, okay, this is interesting. He is trying to grow his game. This is going to be a year again without Tyrese Halliburton. The Pacers aren't going to be in the finals picture, but can he kind of solidify himself as a core piece moving forward? And so to kind of see it quietly go backwards as the year went on was a little bit disappointing. And now with this Clippers group, I want to see how I think the drives in particular could be very important, especially with Darius Garland's health being a little bit up in the air. Like, you are missing that element from James Harden. He can replicate a lot of that in terms of just the general downhill pressure. Any kind of passing growth off of that should be super helpful. And for a Clippers team that I would imagine is going to play a little bit faster now with Harden out of the building, with Zubats out of the building, it should be a style that he's comfortable in. I don't think the Clippers play as fast as like last year's Pacers or even this year's Pacers, but like that uptick should still be helpful for Benedict Mathurin. So I think it's an interesting landing spot for him and an interesting opportunity for him. And beyond that, Isaiah Jackson getting further and further away from the lower body injuries. Like, how does he slide in with Darius Garland in particular? That should be fun. So I'm intrigued. I think the Clippers did a good job here. Some nice young swings that they aren't necessarily tied to. So should be a lot of fun. All right, Steve, let's talk about one of the more interesting trades of deadline week. Kristaps Porzingis heading to the Golden State Warriors, Jonathan Kuminga and Buddy Hield heading to the Atlanta Hawks. Now, again, the Hawks ended up making more moves. They eventually get Gabe Vincent in the building, in addition to Jock Landale, who had himself one heck of a debut last night. But Kristaps to the Warriors, Jonathan to the Atlanta Hawks. I spent a lot of time trying to formulate my thoughts on this deal, particularly from Atlanta side. Because while I am glad that we are no longer having the what are the Warriors going to do with Jonathan Kuminga conversation, I now just kind of land on what runway is Jonathan Kuminga going to have in Atlanta? Like, I think there are some scheme things that fit what he does. I feel like there are some lineup things and some hierarchy things that don't necessarily fit what he does slash where he wants to be. Go ahead.
I'm going to stop you right there, brother, because one, I was not that intrigued by this trade. Matter of fact, when it happened, I said, y'all got it. Whatever y'all say on this, I trust it, whatever. Jonathan Kuminga is no longer a Golden State Warrior. I don't have to deal with that anymore. And so for me, I will say that the fit for Atlanta is more so different context. They get up and down the floor, higher pace and tempo, more of a chance to play with some different lineups. So while the hierarchy is maybe different or the lineups are weird, he's not having to fit into what Golden State does. Golden State is a very specific type of place to play. Atlanta is a lot different. We can get up and down the floor. And if you want to see, I don't think it's going to be apples to apples, but Nickeil Alexander-Walker, you didn't think he was going to do this offensively this year. But then what Quinn Snyder does, hey, get up and down, attack. You'll have opportunities. We're going to have a lot of possessions. So now can Jonathan Kuminga play with a level of freedom in a different context to get downhill and finish and score? That's the only intrigue for me. What does it look like? That's all I want to see. Jonathan Kuminga in a different place, in a different context. What does it look like? Atlanta feels like the perfect spot for that. Now, back to you, brother.
No, that's fair. And I guess to bounce off of that, that is where a lot of the intrigue lies for me. I'm just like, huh. And I think the reporting came out. Like, Atlanta was not, like, top of the list from the Kuminga camp. It was someone they had on the radar. So I'm just like, okay, how is he going to slide in? Because, like, I don't think he is, you know, barring injury, like, I don't think he's a starter in Atlanta. And so with the reserve group, just what are the what is the lineup blend going to look like and how much freedom is it going to have? To your point, I do agree, as the Hawks are a little bit more free-flowing, when their defense is right, at the very least, you do have more opportunity for Jonathan Kuminga to attack early in offense or just to get those early transition baskets. And I think his overall athleticism and his ability to get downhill and even some of the post-up stuff, if he gets cross-matched on the smaller guards, all of those things should help the Atlanta Hawks. In the half court, I am still a little bit dubious. Like, we'll see what that looks like. But I guess to the 10,000-foot view, at least we're not having the Golden State conversation. So, like, I am happy that that part is done. For Golden State, this is very much a ceiling play, I feel, at least in the short term, because Kristaps Porzingis has just the expiring contract. First and foremost, you want him to get healthy, because he has not been, as he deals with this illness. When he is on the floor, though, Steve, he is still a prolific shot. He's still a prolific spacer. He's still a prolific pick and pop threat. He's still someone that you could throw down the free throw line area if he gets a switch and gets some buckets. And defensively, he is incredibly tall, a very good rim protector. And so the theory of him opening up space for anything Steph and company does inside the arc, and defensively being able to clean up things at the rim while Draymond Green does a little bit of everything, I am intrigued by that. But the baseline question comes back to how much of that are we actually going to see? And ultimately, does this move the needle enough for the Warriors to make some sort of push in the second half of the year? I don't know what the answer is to that as of today. Like, I'm excited to see it. But, oh, that's where I'm intrigued. I see the high end, but, like, if we don't see Kristaps, we're not going to get that. I understand some of the fit stuff with Kuminga, but if some of the defense problems perk back up, or if he doesn't shoot well enough, or if there's anything that pops and Quinn Snyder's like, well, I don't really want to play this dude either, are we just back in the same spot again with just different colors? So that's where I'm just like, this is interesting to me, but I don't know if I can declare a pure winner or loser of this deal. It just feels like swapping of the deck chairs in a sense.
You worked yourself into a shoe, brother. Porzingis is the big that would work for the Golden State Warriors. I think his ability to space the floor, use him in different ways, he fits what Golden State likes to do. The issue is Jimmy Butler is not there. So now you are just trying to have a piece that is around. If he's healthy, that will help add to what Steph Curry can do and see how you can get the most out of this year. I think that's all that they are trying to do. And it's up to if KP is going to be healthy enough to be on the floor. And if he is, I think the Golden State has looked for this. They've been asking Quentin Post to do what Kristaps Porzingis can bring to the table. So it makes sense. The only issue is you don't have Jimmy Butler, your ceiling is lower. And so what is that going to mean overall for Golden State? You got to keep it simple. Got to keep it simple.
Yes. You know, I'm thinking, what does it look like this year? Like, what is the next Kristaps contract going to look like? It's a lot of stuff, but that's where my brow was raised on that one. While we're on big, Steve, Nikola Vucevic, no longer a Chicago Bull. He goes to the Boston Celtics, him in a second-round pick, for Anthony Simons in a second-round pick, which kicked off a chain of the Bulls acquiring approximately 14 guards during this trade deadline.
Hey, hold on. No, I said, hey, this is a lot of guards, Chicago, and every trade was more guards. And it's like, I don't know how this is going to work. I like all of these guards you've acquired. I don't know how you're going to play every single one of them. That was like, whoa, hey, what's going on here, brothers? But go ahead, continue.
Okay. The King, you know, Sacramento, you have more cowbell, the Bulls, more guards. So there you go. But no, I think this is good work from the Boston Celtics. I think the fact that they were able to thread the needle of some more center depth in the room. If we do want to go five out, want to use our bigs as hubs, Nikola Vucevic can do all of those things and sprinkle in the occasional post up on top of that. And if we feel bad about the defense, well, we still have Nemias Kata, who's having a career year. Like, we can still mix and match in a way. So, like, Vooch helps us without dominating the center position or pigeonholing us into certain lineups. Like, I think that's a good blend. Also, not going to spend a whole bunch of time on the financial realities of the NBA. We have more interesting basketball things to talk about. But the Celtics being able to add to the room while also lowering the tax bill and giving themselves more flexibility this year and heading into the offseason is just good work overall. So, like, quick hat tip, I suppose, on that front. But Vooch is an interesting fit in Boston. And I think he is going to help in multiple areas. And as the Celtics group is primed for making some noise in the Eastern Coast pictures, if not making just a deep run overall, and this is independent of if Jason Tatum makes his return, at any point this season.
No.
I think it's going to win from the Boston Celtics.
Don't. Sit down, Jason Tatum. Don't even think about it.
You've chill, been consistent with this.
Don't even think about it, Jason Tatum. You take your time. I think the biggest thing for me with Boston is you were able to add the type of – it gets interesting. I think on one hand, Anthony Simons had finally reached a point where – he was doing exactly what you needed him to do. He knew his role. He was part of the, I need to shoot the basketball. You felt comfortable with that. I think the interesting part is you've had so many bigs contribute for Boston. Did you need Vucevic? But being able to add Vucevic's talent while also, you know, making some savings, his ability to kind of space the floor, his ability to post up, he can give you some lineup versatility. So you should feel comfortable with having more pieces, more lineups you could throw out there. And especially Joe Mazzulla will ask him to compete. Vuce probably been waiting to be in a winning situation. I don't think it takes too much away from what Boston has done this season. So I like that move from Boston to add a Vucevic. I think his skill set should help them out. And I think defensively, they have the right kind of infrastructure and the right type of game plan mentality where I think he'll be asked to do his job and do his job well. So I can understand if Boston fans push back a little bit, but I think it's a good deal considering you got Simons, now you add Vooch. That should help you this year continue on your goals.
Yeah, I think it's a good bit of business. I think I'm going to be keeping an eye on the three-point shooting of Vooch in particular. Is a good shooter. How willing is he going to be to fire? It's going to be something that I'm keeping an eye on as he heads to Boston, where they are absolutely going to ask him to take a bunch. He has a year in Orlando where he took six, hovering around four and a half with Chicago the last few years, 40% last year, about 37% this year. So I'm keeping an eye on what the balance is going to be because, again, he does have some interior value on top of that. But I just want to see how he's going to be utilized. Can do a lot, but what does it look
like? I thought you were going to say you're going to keep an eye on the defense. That was going to be the bit.
I am also keeping an eye on the defense. Chicago much, hey, we're going to send all these pick and rolls down the sideline. I'm going to have Vooch up. I think Boston has a better defensive infrastructure than Chicago Bulls. Like, I don't think that is a hot take to say in any capacity. So, like, he should be better equipped to hold up enough. And again, if he doesn't, all right, well, then fine. Thank you for your 23 minutes, Nikola Vucevic. We'll go back to Nemias Kata. Or get into some smaller lineups if you want to. So, like, again, that's one of those, like, low-risk, moderately high-reward type swings for the Boston Celtics. Okay, Steve, we are going to take a break.
Hold on. Before we go to break, I have one thing about Chicago. It was very funny that Billy Donovan was like, hey, boy, we sure are going to miss Vooch in the half court because he tied a lot of things together. And then the immediate start of that Chicago-Toronto game was, hey, what do we do after this first action? There's no Vooch to throw the ball to. And it was also funny to watch Anthony Simons and Jaden Ivey be like, hey, you know, the first game, let's fit in type beat. Let's say we should fit in. It's like, no, you're here to score. You need you to go score. Like, go put your head down and score. So that was it. Get us out of here.
Okay. We're going to briefly get us out of here. We're going to take a break. And when we return, we got more deals to talk about. We're going to hand out some winner and loser tags for teams and some players based on what the deadline brought to us. We'll be back. Please stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of The Dunker Spot. We're talking everything trade deadline. Steve, let's get into some winners and losers. We're going to go back and forth. We're going to go through the winners, and then we're going to go through the losers. For me, Steve, fun to hit them in the first segment, but we can get it here. The Detroit Pistons, I think, should get the winner tag, or get a winner tag, rather, for their deadline. Like, I know there was a lot of conversation around what should Detroit do. They are the best team in the East. They have a little bit of a gap with the one seed now. Should they make an all-in swing? Let's get a star in the building in the three or the four spot to really solidify themselves as a championship contender. Should they make a smaller move around the edges? Should they do absolutely nothing? They end up in that middle ground. Let's make a minor swing. We send out Jaden Ivey. We get Kevin Huerter in the building. We don't do much else. I like the Kevin Huerter fit for them. It's 31% from three so far this year, but this is a career 37% guy, a guy that can spot up and knock down shots, a guy that can come off of a screen or just in general can relocate into open spaces and knock down threes. Detroit needs some more shooting and spacing in the half court. Kevin Huerter helps with that. The fact that he is comfortable putting the ball on the floor, again, this is not going to be like a 35% rim rate guy, but someone that can attack closeouts, someone that can play make for you, can run some pick and rolls or initiate some handoffs for you. That should help take some pressure off of Cade when they are on the floor together. If you're talking about second units, if it's him and Danis Jenkins playing together, something like that, either one of those guys can kick off sets or defense in rotation. I think he helps. If you have any difference about Duncan Robinson late in games, Kevin Huerter, not going to argue he's an all-defense guy, but I do think he is a better defender on and off the ball than Duncan Robinson is. So, like, you have the optionality there. There are also lineups in which you can play those two guys together to really maximize space. It just felt like a good bit of business for Detroit to address a need. They do so giving up Jaden Ivey, but someone that I don't think was a major part of the future because of how the team has kind of progressed over the last year and a half. If you could turn that into a need without giving up anything else major, like, that feels like a plus to me. So I start with Detroit, Steve.
You know, I'm going to co-sign your Detroit winner because I was on the team of, hey, you guys have made this run to the top of the Eastern Conference. I hear people saying, make a swing. No. Let's see exactly what you have, how far this can go, and then let's see what you need after the postseason run. And so being able to add a Kevin Huerter, who, if you remember last year for Detroit, a lot of what J.B. Bickerstaff did was, okay, we need spacing. And so we're going to have shooting on the court. And this year we didn't have some of the shooting we had the year prior, so we're going to the dog pound, and we're going to have defense on the court. But you know what? We do need some shooting, so you have the optionality that we can have a little bit more spacing. We can keep the dog pound mentality. We can just kind of mix and match, which I think is important for Detroit. And so I think Kevin Huerter just plays right into it, and I think he laid it out perfectly. It's a big win for Detroit as far as being able to keep what we have but kind of build on it on the margins. I think to the Jaden Ivey portion, it's tough. I thought he did a heck of a job this year coming back from injury and understanding what the team had progressed into and fitting into what they had progressed into. The problem is they had progressed into something that didn't necessarily need Jaden Ivey to the same degree that it may have had before. And so that's where you end up with a move. But I think it's a win for Detroit.
I like it. Last thing I'll say, and I'll toss it to you for your first winner, Steve. I think career high 63% inside the arc for Kevin Huerter. What's really going to pop, I think, in the half court in particular, aside from the shooting, he is such a good cutter. He's such a smart mover. It's why you had so many connections with him and Zach Collins were there on the floor together, him and Nikola Vucevic. I think Jalen Duren in particular is going to really enjoy the off-ball movement of Kevin Huerter. The handoff chemistry is going to be there, but him jetting back door when someone tries to overplay him, he's going to hit him with bounce passes. I think that is going to pop, and Detroit fans will enjoy that aspect. Okay, Steve. The first team or player that you want to highlight as a winner of this deadline is?
Come on, man. I have to go with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I have to go with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who put themselves in this position, winning as many games they have recently, and then end up just with James Harden in the lineup now. And so now we can really knock on the door of the Eastern Conference and make a push. And I think when you're the Cleveland Cavaliers with this specific team, I think you had reached a point where the core four, I don't want to say it hit the ceiling, but we kind of knew some of the answers. And I think some of what teams were trying to do to Darius Garland was, hey, man, how much do you want to shoot the basketball? Like, we're just going to give you drop now. Like, it's just drop for you. Like, this is all you're getting. And are you going to make the plays? Are you going to make the reads? Are you going to stay aggressive? We knew how important Darius Garland was to Cleveland. But now you've replaced that with James Harden, who you can have your question marks about him. You know he's going to be aggressive. You know he can make plays. You know he can self-create. Teams are going to have to guard him and pay attention to him in a different way. And so he's someone who can start a play, who someone can end a play. What Cleveland does with their pace and their tempo, Donovan Mitchell obviously has done a lot this year, but James Harden and his drives have been important for the Clippers. He brings that to the table for the Cleveland. I think that adds a different element. Pick and roll play with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley is a massive plus. And so especially if you split lineups like Cleveland has done in the past where you have one guard, one big, that's only going to help them out. But I also think the sneaky part is Dennis Schroeder, Keon Ellis. Boy, they looked real good in their debut. Where it's Dennis Schroeder. It's a reminder, the drives and the defense, that adds something to the table to where we don't necessarily need a ton from you, Dennis Schroeder, but boy, when you do it, it looks great. And now you got Keon Ellis on demon time saying, I'll guard anyone, doesn't matter what it is. I'll shoot, I'll drive, I'll do whatever. So now I think you look at Cleveland having more of what they thought they would have to start this season, and having enough wins to be in a position to, hey, man, we're not that far off where you think we are. Do you really want to deal with us in the playoffs? And so I think that's where it's like, if you're Cleveland, James Harden, once again, identifying a position where, hey, I think I can help you all win games. And we're going to look back, Nikias, 10 years down the road. James Harden has been right on every exit in every place that he's trying to get to. It's been insane. You know, You know your friend who keeps a job? That's James Harden. I don't know how he's done it. But I can help you all over here. Yeah, don't worry about it. I got you.
Ah. Oh. That's such a great analogy. I immediately thought of someone in my life. Oh God, she's check in with her. Like, hey, how you doing? Oh, you know, I don't like it here. I'm about to go somewhere else. And 2 weeks later, somewhere else, higher pay, better benefits. Like, okay, well, this is what you get for being smart and talented. There we go. Okay, I am with you that Cleveland is a winner in this deadline. Like, I think it is fair to have questions about the Harden piece. If you're especially looking at long term, like James Harden, very much in one stage of his career, Darius Garland, when healthy, is an all-star. You have concerns about the toe, the foot, etc. Like, that's understandable, but there is still just a 10-year gap there. So I understand those concerns. I am really curious to see, especially as we get into the playoffs with Cleveland, I'm curious to see how the defense portion actually plays out. Because I think Harden is, like, one, he is just bigger than Darius Garland. And I think for a Cleveland team that has shown over the last couple of years, we are very willing to switch. At the very least, sometimes we're switching at a top 3 rate, sometimes like top 12, but like we'll do it. James Harden being able to defend bigger players, like he should slot into that. There is also just the general stuff with Harden. It's like, okay, so like where does that balance land? And in terms of the aggression point, like I think he is more consistently a threat in looking to score than Darius Garland is. I do think we've also had some playoff moments where it's like, hey, James, we would appreciate if you shot the ball a little bit. So you hope that doesn't perk up when we get there. But, like, being able to sit Donovan Mitchell and have James Harden running the show with everything he can do and everything that he has shown this year, like, he's in a very efficient 25-8 this year. He has been incredibly good this season. I think the Cavs are going to enjoy that. I think the Cavs' bigs are going to enjoy that, in particular, when we talk about some of the pick-and-roll stuff with them. So I'm excited to see what this group looks like. And to your Schroeder and Keon Ellis point, it was very funny in that first quarter. Dennis Schroeder's like, okay, yeah, like I will just take on Chris Dunn late in the clock and just win this drive immediately. He's like, oh, Keon Ellis checks in because Cleveland got to some subs. It's like, huh, where's Keon Ellis? They eventually bring him in, and like within the first minute and a half, him being in early offense possession for the Clippers, we're trying to get Kawhi Leonard a touch, and Keon Ellis with like his offhand just snags the ball, steals the entry pass. It's like, ah, yeah, this could be fun for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I am right there with you, Steve. They certainly classifies a winner for me. As I get to winner number two. Hey, so the Charlotte Hornets, winners of 8 straight, by the way. First time that they've won 8 straight games in this century, which is a wild thing to say out loud. They've added Coby White to this group. And I tweeted it, and I'll make sure I say it here as well. I think Coby White is a better basketball player than Colin Sexton. So, like, you do that. I do think the level of professionalism and the level of competitiveness and just how Colin Sexton embraced everything the Hornets on and off the floor, I think the Hornets are going to miss that. Now, they're going to miss that enough to where they are, like, a worse team with Coby White. Like, I'm not going to make that argument. But Colin Sexton deserves his flowers for what he brought into the play that he had, especially as of late. Just wanted to salute Colin Sexton for the Hornets tenure. But adding Coby White to this mix, I can drive, I can knock down shots, I can relocate, I can play make a little bit. This is fun, Steve. This is really fun. Coby White is a very good basketball player. And like him alongside LaMelo Ball in lineups, whether he starts or not, we get into some of those hybrid units, I think he's going to enjoy playing off of the gravity that LaMelo Ball provides. Think about the Hornets in transition. You naturally think about those 70-foot lobs that LaMelo is comfortable throwing to Brandon Miller and others. Like, this could just be Coby White filling the lane. I'm just getting transition threes up now. We're going to juice our three-point rate if you're Charlotte. And it isn't bad already. So, like, he's going to help in that. Another guy that can get downhill that takes pressure off of LaMelo, off of Brandon Miller, off of Colin Knipple. Whenever they play together, I'm sure we're going to see those four plus Musa Diabate at some point. Like, I think being able to puncture the paint and make life easier for them, get them some catch-and-shoot opportunities, allow them to attack some closeouts, especially with how good all three of those guys are at relocating off the ball. This Charlotte offense that has been top 3 in the league in the calendar year 2026, it should get even better with Coby White. And being able to do so without giving up A-plus stuff, I think it's a good bit of business, Steve. Like, I love the Coby White addition. The Tyus Jones addition is kind of interesting to me because you end up getting, like, the Mike Conley move and things like that. They end up adding seconds during this deadline as well. So if you're talking about asset management on top of adding Coby White to this mix, I think it's a good bit of business. Charlotte's a winner for me, and they are certainly doing a lot of winning right now.
Well, I mean, this is the first time that they've won 8 games in one season since 1999 when Nekias Duncan was 4 years old. So that's been a large stretch for Charlotte. Kobe White being able to come back to North Carolina is one thing. But I think for Charlotte, it's, you know, we turn Colin Sexton, the idea of that, into Kobe White, who they should be more than willing to re-sign going forward. I think for Charlotte, it's adding more skill into the team, having a little bit more lineup versatility, making sure we have guard play at all times, especially with the emergence of Con Knipple, especially with the emergence of Brandon Miller and his control offensively. LaMelo feeling that comfort, you can mix and match. And we know they like to use their guards as screeners. We know the flow has been better offensively for Charlotte. If you have multiple players who can start a possession, you have multiple players who can end the possession, that puts you in a stronger position to just kind of have the ideals that Charles Lee wants, to where we are just playing outside of the first action, outside of the first play. And I think Kobe White, you got to remember, he hasn't been as healthy this year. But once he turned the corner in Chicago, he became a different level type of player. You add that to what Charlotte's built, I think that's a really good move for now and down the line. Because, again, this is the Charlotte Hornets team that Nekias knocking on the door of the play-in. Long-term storytelling, Nekias. You've done it. You've done it. Look at this.
They did it. we're so back, Steve. Now, I would just say, I guess, two things. One, just on the schedule point, like we'll see as the Bulls suffer the loss, the Hornets get another dub over the Houston Rockets, which, hey, man, I'm going to talk about Houston a little bit later. I'll say that for now. If the Hornets do, in fact, make the play-in, I would like to see them win a play-in game, because the last time we've seen them in the play-in, it has not been fun. Those James Borrego teams, that competitive until they get to the play-in games and it gets haywire. Like, I at least want to see good games there. Second thing I'll add, to your point about Charlotte having consistent guard play and how important that's going to be. On the year, the Hornets with LaMelo Ball on the floor, a plus 6.7 net rating, that is quite good. That'd be like a top six, top seven mark in the league overall. With LaMelo Ball on the bench, minus 2.7, which isn't awful. Like, that is a big overall split, but like, they're kind of treading water with LaMelo off the floor. Where it really stands out is the offense, Steve. A 124.3 offensive rating with LaMelo Ball on the floor. This all coming from PvP stats. A 112.1 offensive rating when LaMelo Ball is not on the floor. I think having Kobe White to fill some of those minutes, and I think there is like a, I think it's a notable playmaking difference between Kobe White and Colin Sexton. Not going to call Kobe White like an A-plus guy in that regard, but there is just more there. I think having Kobe White in the non-LaMelo minutes also seems to be pretty important to your point. So just wanted to make sure I highlighted that portion. But salute to the Charlotte Hornets.
Understood. Now, can I give you a winner?
Yes, absolutely.
That stunned me, Nika. The Oklahoma City Thunder and their ability to just think ahead once again. Them snagging and using some of this draft capital to get Jared McCain on the low is one of the most Oklahoma City Thunder things you can do. Hey, man, don't even worry about it, man. Take your time. Mm-hmm. Get that knee right. Get your leg right. You're good. Don't even worry about it. If you feel good, you contribute to what we're doing. If not, we'll see you next year. And, buddy, you just add Jared McCain, who had a heck of a rookie year. Injuries, you know, kind of made it interesting. The Philadelphia fit where VJ Edgecombe said, hey, guess what? I'm here. And we're going to go drive and kick. And it's like, well, you know, try to figure that out. And now Jared McCain just become a Thunder, where they're one of the more patient teams and more of the teams that nurture young talent and get you along into the right place, being able to casually add him down the line. It's just like, hey, OKC, eventually you guys got to do something. Yeah, sure, man. We're going to add another young talent. Bring it here. Bring it over here. So that, to me, is a big win for OKC. May not mean a ton this year. Obviously, the Shea injury is not ideal. But going down the line, being able to add a young talent like that, boy, they are doing it right. They are doing it right.
And this is why you accumulate all the draft picks if you're Oklahoma City or anyone in that regard. Like, one, there's the inherent value. Oh, we can just add young players to the mix. But as we've seen in previous years with the Thunder, oh, we got these excess picks. There's someone in the draft we want. Here's a bunch of first or here's a bunch of second so we can move up five spots to get the guy that we really want. And in the case of Jared McCain, to your point, Steve, if Shea is out, things going to be reevaluated in a week. But if Shea is out a little bit post All-Star break, okay, cool. We can give Jared McCain some minutes. If it's looking ahead, we love Isaiah Joe. We need to clear some room somewhere. We trade Isaiah Joe for something. Jared McCain, you just take those minutes. And there's just more on-ball juice there, with all due respect to Isaiah Joe. Like, the fact that they could do that, like, I didn't have the Thunder as a winner because it's more like they are a winner in waiting in this case, because I don't know how much Jarrett McCain is going to factor into the calculus this year. And if he is factoring in this year, it likely means there have been injuries elsewhere, and you don't generally love that for OKC, but they've certainly dealt with their fair share of absences this season, Steve, en route to the best record in the league. But, man, it's such a stealthy get for them. And, like, I didn't hate that for the Sixers. Like, I understood the angst and the frustration from Sixer fans that saw that Jarrett McCain stretch last year before he went down. It was like, why am I giving up this dude for draft picks at the very least? Like, if you're telling me we're moving Jarrett McCain in a package to bring in, like, maybe not a star, but, like, okay, a starter quality guy, we're adding to the wing room or something like that, talk yourself into that. Why am I caring about the picks right now? I think Nick Nurse, and to your point, Steve, VJ Edgecombe, mostly, but I think Nick Nurse kind of shown, like, these are the guards, or this is the perimeter room we want to work with. You get a stint. If you're knocking down shots and you're holding up defensively, we got you. If you're not, come sit next to me. If the ceiling has lowered for the Jarrett McCain experience in Philadelphia specifically because of who's ahead of him on the depth chart or any kind of coach trust type things, and I'm not saying that negatively, to be clear. Like, I don't think there's, like, smoke or anything like that. But if there's any hesitation there, yeah, I probably take a first-round pick, a later one, but a first-round pick in this year's draft plus other draft capital that I can use to get young guys in or can use to move up in the draft or use to get veterans in eventually over, like, a cap of 16 minutes a game with Jarrett McCain. So, like, I understand the asset management from the Sixers' perspective on that front.
I'm probably sure it was tough to part with Jarrett McCain because of the potential that he showed, and you could have just had an ungodly amount of guard play, but it may have been capped. But at the same time, can't forget what Don Barlow has done for this team. And hey, we kind of need to have him around, especially if Paul George is going to be out for an extended amount of time. We may need Jabari Walker. So if we have the guard play with Maxey, with Edgecombe, with Quentin Grimes, if we need to be able to have these hybrid fours that can play next to our bigs, next to Joel Embiid when he's healthy, is that more important to have that than just having the promise of Jarrett McCain down the line, especially when you're having success? And so I think Philadelphia just kind of had to look in the mirror and be like, you know, hey, that's me. you had to find yourself in a position where, okay, do we prioritize adding, getting something for him now, but keeping a bulk of what we've built so far this year down the playoff run? And so I think that's where it gets a little tricky.
Yeah, I think that is more than fair. Steve, another team that I want to highlight on the winter section, I think it's going to be the last team that I get to before getting to some player-specific stuff to cap things off on the winter section. Okay. A winner slash, woo boy, is this convenient. The New York Knicks, adding Jose Alvarado in the room, I think he is going to feed off of this New York crowd. Those home games are going to be electric. When he's getting those backcourt steals, or just in general, we're adding full court pressure and navigating screens. We're going to be a dog. We're going to be nasty. Those second units, the defense is going to be fun. The playmaking, the drives, any shooting that you can get from Jose Alvarado, you take that. But then you also add in the context of Deuce McBride might just be out for quite a bit now as he deals with a core injury that may require surgery. It's like, oh, this went from Jose Alvarado is a nice bonus, and if you are giving him up, because Gershon Yabusele, again, is in Chicago now. They had separate deals done there. They had Dalen Terry. They no longer have Dalen Terry. This went from, oh, Jose Alvarado is nice guard depth, to, yeah, we kind of need Jose Alvarado, who through this, you know, get to the tail end of the New Orleans stretch as they are naturally trending younger. They're dealing with all kinds of injuries. It's Jose Alvarado just always finds a way to win minutes, despite whoever's playing with him or around him, et cetera. Like, he just makes winning plays. And so this is a good addition that feels even more important following the Deuce McBride news. And naturally, you hope Deuce is able to get healthy. He's ready for the playoff run, et cetera. But if he isn't, you got to feel good about having Jose Alvarado in the wing. So I wanted to give a quick salute there.
My initial reaction was, boy, that's a sneaky get for the Knicks. You know, long live the three-guard lineups. Jose Alvarado defense in the garden, let's go. And then it was like, Deuce McBride out. And I was like, oh, they needed to do this. I understand it now. But I think in the short term and the long term, being able to have his energy, his compete level for this team, the defense that he's going to bring to the table, I think it's just massive, and especially come playoff time. When you're trying to harass different players, trying to throw different lineups out there, the Knicks conceptually have so many defenders that I enjoy. They're going to have to piece it together, But I like adding more defense into the building. He's turned himself into a more consistent shooter. He's going to be back home. So that always has value to me. So, you know, Slim Mix.
I like it. I like it. Steve, do you have another winner for us?
The Minnesota Timberwolves. Adding Ayo Dosunmu, that was very intriguing to me because of his ability to play. I think his skill set and his size fits what Minnesota wants to do. And I think his ability to kind of, I can drive, I can space, I can shoot, I can defend. I think that opens up a lot of things for Minnesota. And they have some interesting lineup combinations they can get to. So if you're telling me we get Anthony Edwards, Dante DiVincenzo, Ayo Dosunmu, Jay McDaniels, and a big, sign me up. And we've seen Minnesota throw out like three bigs at the same time. So I think Minnesota being able to add to their lineup versatility going into a playoff stretch where you're going to need that in the Western Conference, getting a young talent who can do multiple things, doesn't need the ball, but can attack in transition, can attack in the half court, can make shots. I think that was a big one for Minnesota, just kind of casually add that at the deadline. Also, very quickly, can y'all get Mike Conley back, please?
Hey, listen, Anthony Edwards already gave the crease. Like, hey, they told me they might be able to come back. Hey, make sure he sees this. They might. We want you back, big dog. So we will see what the roster spot situation looks like. But for those who aren't aware of the rule, like naturally, if you trade Mike Conley to the Bulls, et cetera, and the Bulls waive him, the Wolves couldn't get Mike Conley back. The fact that it was Mike Conley to the Bulls and then to the Hornets, you have a second team in there. With a buyout expected for Mike Conley or a waiving expected for Mike Conley because of the second team, that is where Mike Conley is able to return to the Minnesota Timberwolves, if they want to do that. And it seems like Dane Moore and others have said there is interest there. So would not be surprising if within the next week or so we see Mike Conley back in a Wolves uniform. So that is how you get there.
Now, Nekias, I know you had a couple players that are winners. I will add one that I did not anticipate. Free agent guard Javon Carter, per Shams Charania, has agreed to a deal with the Orlando Magic for the rest of the season. So he's a winner today. Now, who are your winners?
Oh man. Okay. So three things, I suppose. One, thank you for getting me the Javon Carter news. I would have been very annoyed if I saw that after we finished recording. So thank you for that. Two, just wanted to quickly echo, I love the IO fit. I think him in transition in particular could be incredibly valuable for Minnesota Timberwolves that has players that can get busy in transition, but like some of the decision-making in transition can get funny sometimes with the Wolves on their weird nights. So having IO who can just streak down the floor and get you stuff at the rim or knock down threes should be helpful. The one thing that I would say, and I tweeted about it when it comes to IO, as he is having the best shooting season of his career, I just have a back of the head thought, like, ooh, if he has like a cold stretch of shooting at any point, because even as he's shooting as well, like teams aren't running with their hair on fire, trying to run him off the line type beat. If he does have the cold stretch, like what does that mean for the offense? What does that mean for his minutes? Like I'm just keeping that in the back of brain. And I was looking at the catch and shoot 3-point numbers for Ayo in his career so far. It was 37% as a rookie. It was 31% the next year. It was 40% the following year. It was 34%. And now we're up to 42% on catch and shoot three. So it's just like we're up, then we're down, and we're up, then we're down. So I am keeping an eye on that. But I do still love the player. And ultimately, I agree with you. This is a winning move. Now, as we get to player winners, Steve, I would like to quickly salute Spencer Jones, your basketball cousin, who, because of some roster maneuvering from the Denver Nuggets, Hunter Tyson traded to the Brooklyn Nets, weighed by the Brooklyn Nets. So best of luck to Hunter Tyson. The Nuggets cleared enough room to convert Spencer Jones to a standard contract. Spencer Jones has been probably more important than you intended heading into the season, but he has been an important piece, someone that can defend multiple positions. The cutting has been strong. He has knocked down shots regardless of what the shooting form looks like. So just a salute to him. Like, this is a very clear signal of we appreciate what you're doing for us. We want to keep this moving forward. So I think he is a very clear winner in this deadline.
Understood. Do you have any other winners? Is Jace Richardson still a winner, considering they got Javon Carter?
Well, yeah, that was a little bit, because I had that to peel the curtain back. I had Jace Richardson in the notes, and I ended up tweeting after the Tyus Jones trade, or I guess the initial one, because now Tyus Jones is a member of the Dallas Mavericks. But I remember tweeting out, like, huh, Jace Richardson won the war, because he's given Orlando some good minutes. Like, he has some legitimate juice offensively. And if you're moving Tyus Jones out of there, like, okay, there's some second unit guard minutes that should be free for Jace Richardson. I guess we'll see with Javon Carter. I think, I wonder how much of this is Javon Carter's skill set versus Javon Carter, what he can mean for, like, getting the collective energy of this group, right? Because if Javon Carter isn't going to do anything else, we're talking practice, buddy, we're talking any minutes that he gets in games, I am getting into your jersey, I am defending. Does he help them get some of the energy?
No, yeah. Time to compete. We got to compete. We got to guard. We got to defend. Now, Nekias, Earl Grey, Duncan, do you have any losers on this trade deadline?
I sure do, Steve. I sure do.
Who?
Loser number one. Yeah, where's the owl? The Miami Heat.
Oh.
It has to be the Miami Heat. And I recognize, as someone that grew up a Heat fan, like, maybe this is hitting me harder because of the emotional attachment. And I'll lay that on the table first. I don't, in a literal sense, I get how you get here, but it's kind of inexcusable that you leave this trade deadline without doing literally anything. One of three teams not to make any trade. The Heat, the Rockets, which, who boy, stay there. We're getting to you. And the San Antonio Spurs. I understand the Giannis Antetokounmpo pursuit, because why would you not want Giannis in the building if you have the chance? And within the broader context of Miami asset allocation and dream acquisitions, Giannis has clearly been at the top of the list since Milwaukee was eliminated in the playoffs, and you had the ESPN article while he was at the Dern presser talking about his potential future in Milwaukee. Miami has been eyeing a potential Giannis pursuit for a very long time. So it makes sense that when presented with the opportunity to maybe trade for him at the deadline, this is what we keep the powder dry for. This is where we want to give up everything. And per reporting, Miami was willing to move anything outside of Bam Adebayo to get this done. But one, and we talked about this on this podcast, Steve, I asked you the question, hey, should Mill do this now or should they wait? I said they should probably wait, take this to the offseason if you're going to do it, and open up the pool. There was always the possibility of Giannis not being moved, and in the broader sense, the possibility of Milwaukee not even being all that serious about Giannis being moved by the deadline. And Giannis himself, with everything that he has said this year, he has still found a way to come back to, like, in an ideal scenario, I would like to remain a Milwaukee Buck. This was never a guarantee. So am I upset that the Miami Heat didn't get Giannis? No. I'm sure the Heat are, and I'm sure Heat fans are, but, like, no. The bigger problem is that if you are gearing up for a Giannis pursuit or any sort of star, we'll set the Ja Morant stuff aside for a little bit, you kind of need the assets to pull this kind of thing off. And the Heat's outright refusal to move off of things that get them more first-round picks in the building, that get them more second-round picks in the building, that may get them some distressed rookie-scale contracts in the building that can later be used for stuff. It is incredibly frustrating that this is always land. And now you are in a situation to where this Giannis thing is going to be taken to the offseason. And in the best-case scenario for Miami, the Bucks miss the play-in. Giannis is still like, actually, I don't see the pathway here. Y'all tried to make some moves. I don't really like it. I still want out. But now you are going to be dealing with potentially the Houston Rockets, who could toss out a lot of stuff. The San Antonio Spurs, who could potentially be tossing out a lot of stuff. The Los Angeles Lakers, who they just keep being mentioned in this. And I guess you can't, in a literal sense, eliminate them from saying sign and trade Austin Reeves plus the future first-round picks that we have left to try to get them in the building. In addition to whatever Minnesota, who was heavily linked, the New York Knicks, who have more ammo in the offseason. You weren't in a position, you're just heading into this, you weren't in a position to outbid them if it gets to the offseason. And then you did nothing at the deadline to make her in better position to have more assets to toss if Giannis becomes available, or any other star for that matter. And looking at this roster, can I objectively say they are a bad basketball team? No, Steve. We've talked about how good their defense has been all year. We talked about their offense at the beginning of the year and in the middle of the year. We've recently, not too far removed, to talk about, like, hey man, Bam Adebayo is knocking down a whole bunch of threes now. Norm Powell's an all-star. Objectively, I can't say they are a bad team. I can firmly say this is not a title team. They're just not. And so, like, them staying in this middle ground and also not setting themselves up for moves that can get them out of the middle ground, it's sitting on your hands for some principle that is meaning less and less to the players that you actually want to acquire. How many of the young stars understand and respect like what Pat Riley means to NBA basketball? Like, we are getting close. We're just at the generation where like that does not hit the same as it would for the guys in like their late 20s, early 30s. You can't lean on that to the same degree. I think we both agree Eric Spoelstra, if he's not the best coach in the NBA, he's certainly in the top three at minimum. How much does that mean to some of the guys that you want to acquire if you don't have the requisite talent, one, to get that star in the building, but two, to be able to build around that star if you get them in the building? And thus, you get the fruits of what Eric Spoelstra can do. And the secondary frustration thing for me, Steve, is because Miami has this market and because they are strong organ and they have this synergy between the main club and the G League club. They're always able to discover these guys, undrafted second round guys that fit into what we do. We get them through the G League system. We take them to the big market. We get quality minutes from guys like Max Strus and Drew Smith and on and on and on and on and on. You have proven that you can do this. It makes it even more excusable that you are not willing to then say, hey, we're probably not going to give this guy a 4-year deal in the offseason. Let's see if we can get some seconds, or let's see if we can get somebody else in the building and then just kind of restart the clock with someone else, because we have proven we have the development, we have the structure to be able to continue doing this. So what is this gray area that the Heat have found themselves in? Why are they comfortable being in this gray area? It's odd.
They're looking for the big one. They're looking for the big one. Because how do you know they could have gotten someone that would have improved their offer? How do you know? How do you know? Because here's the thing, right? You ever been in love, Nikias?
Yeah.
Sometimes you wait for the right person at the right moment. Mm-hmm. And it's a roll of the dice, Nikias. But I don't want to rush and make a move. And now I'm in a whole different state. And I've missed out on the biggest opportunity in my life. So I'm going to keep cashing these checks. I'm going to keep doing the best I can. And one day, we're going to swing for the fences.
That's what this was supposed to be for.
They couldn't get Giannis. Now you got to wait. Who'd you want him to get? Who'd you want him to get, guys? Who's available? Who was there?
I don't even think it had to be a specific player, because I think I ended up with Fred, because like they were naturally linked to Ja Morant. I don't think it's egregious that they didn't want to give up major stuff for Ja Morant. I think that part's fine. I just find it very hard to believe that we were in a landscape in which if they put Norm Powell, for example, on the market, I don't think you put Norm for the 2K players. I don't think you put Norm Powell in the trade finder and it says no offers were found. I don't think it's literally zero. Now, that is not me arguing saying the Heat should take quite literally anything, because that obviously isn't fair and wouldn't be smart business. But, like, I find it hard to believe that they would have been able to get, like, literally zero for Norm Powell or literally zero for Tyler Hero, who they have shown by not giving them the extension, and Tyler Hero has dealt with health stuff on top of this now. But they have shown, like, we don't really want to give the super long-term commitment to Tyler Hero. Between those two, Andrew Wiggins was linked to the Golden State Warriors and others. Like, I think they had stuff out there for their veterans if they were serious about getting their veterans. And I think once you hit the pivot point of Milwaukee informing folks, like, actually, we're just not doing this, one, you should just have the contingencies in place already. But at bare minimum, okay, let's make some calls. Is there anyone that wants to add a wing to the room? Is there anyone that wants to add some scoring to the room? It can't be literally nothing. It can't be nothing.
Why?
That's all I'm saying. Because what are you building towards? Like, what are you getting?
Solid team. Kick the can down the road.
It's been a whole lot of can kicking, Steve. That's all I'm saying. And I think that's where the frustration is building. It's been a bunch of can. And I think there was part of the justification over the past few years has been, okay, yeah, Harden's available, but we have these things, we can aim bigger than this. Okay, we really want Dame. We don't want to give up literally everything, because we would love to be able to set up another move beyond that if possible. That doesn't happen. And you go on down the line. We're talking James Harden, Chris Paul stuff they didn't really talk about or didn't really want to dig into. It's like, there have been plenty of names like, no, we can aim bigger than this. Giannis is the one. And so, like, the fact that you have not put yourself in a position heading into this deadline to have more than two first-round picks to be able to toss in a deal. Now, they could not account for the Terry Rozier situation. They get a pass from me on that one. Like I matter. But you get what I'm saying. You can't account for all the stuff that came with Terry Rozier and the pick restriction and stuff like that. But if you're setting up for we want to make a swing for Giannis, and with the way that the free agency landscape in general has changed because of the CBA, we've talked about this a bunch of times on the podcast, Steve. Free agency isn't the same. You can't just bake in clear cap space, sign a superstar. These guys are taking their extensions when they can. They're getting supermax extensions, etc. You can't do that. Make sure you have picks in the room. Make sure you have young guys in the room. So if something like this pops, you can actually put together a grandfather offer. Or godfather offer, rather. Yeah, I think they deserve some criticism, but at the very least, it is more than justified for fans to be frustrated with this is how it ends, and they do nothing at the deadline on top of that. Look at top of the list.
All right. Very good. Well, as we cool Nikias Duncan down, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Dunker Spot.
We are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. I promise I'm good. Steve, I am not going to toss it to you. Any trade deadline losers that you would like to speak about?
The Memphis Grizzlies. The Memphis Grizzlies, because you traded Jaren Jackson Jr. You still have John Morant. Are you going to play John Morant? When are you trading John Morant? What are you waiting for to trade John Morant? What's this going to look like? Are you making a push towards a play-in? Are you trying to go? What are we doing here? I expected Jaren to be the person you traded in the offseason if you're going to tear things down. You reverse course. I don't know what this looks like. I don't know what celebrations to anticipate if he does play again. I'm not sure what's happening there. And I'll roll through. The Chicago Bulls, I like you having
a loser for
Rob Dillingham. Well, only in the sense that you have Rob Dillingham, you have Jaden Ivey, you have Anthony Simons, you have all these guards. How are they all going to play? How are you going to know what they are? What is the next part of this phase? That's so many guards, Nikias. I like the moves, but they're all in the same place. I don't know about that. Like, I don't know. You should order different things there. But, and then the Milwaukee Bucks. You have kicked the can down the road a little bit. No, it's good. Mm-hmm. Giannis is still here. He's posting memes. Everyone's happy. What are we doing? Is he not going to play this year? You're getting a top draft pick. How are you? You saved your relationship, but at what cost? And for how long? That's the question I have, Interior. That's in my soul. What's your next move? Because you found a way to keep this thing going every single time. Okay, we got you, Dame. Okay, we got you, Miles Turner. What's next? What's the next thing? I'm so sorry, Milwaukee fans, but what if he wakes up one day and is like, actually, I would like to leave? And what are you going to do?
Well, I think that's where, I guess two things. So one, directly what you said, like, I think that's where it's the benefit of we are taking this to the offseason. We, in theory, will now have more teams that are willing to give stuff. Now, if Giannis says at the, we get to the offseason, actually, I have a list of two. Because I am now just an expiring at this point. Like, that is the risk that you run. But overall, the fact that you can now take this into the offseason and potentially add Houston, San Antonio, New York to a more serious degree, et cetera, it is still Giannis at the end of the day. Like, even in a restricted market, if Giannis gives a list or something, you still should be able to get good stuff. And so, like, that's where I'll probably have Milwaukee on the other side. But I do understand, like, hey, you kick the can down the road, but what does this actually mean? Which is funny coming off of the Heat conversation where I am complaining about Miami kicking the can down the road, but that is A-okay. The other thing that I wanted to say, as we got a Shams Charania tweet coming through the pipeline, Mike Conley does indeed plan to return to the Minnesota Timberwolves. So they're going to be working on timing, prorated. Yeah! Mike Conley. So Mike Conley will indeed be back. Now, while we're talking about free agent guards, Steve, can I just list like the Brooklyn Nets guards as a concept as one of my losers? Because again, they add in Hunter Tyson, a couple other guys as teams were making like tax moves and stuff like that. Naturally, the Nets cannot roster like 21 people. So they had to waive some folks. And among those waivings, Tyrese Martin, who I feel like I've tweeted like 12 times at this point. Like, I would like to see Tyrese Martin on a good team. We'll see what happens there. Cam Thomas was waived, Steve. And for this saga end, with entering last offseason, restricted free agent, is he going to get an offer? Is he going to get a deal? What's it going to look like? We got some reporting on what some of those offers look like. And I understood why Cam Thomas and the camp would be like, I just averaged this. Why on earth would I take this contract? Fine. I'll take the QO. It's cool. Don't even worry about it, big dog. I am getting to unrestricted free agency, or if you try to trade me, I get to pick my destination to a degree. And so for this to end with, well, actually, well, we couldn't move you. How about we just let you go now? It's just kind of tough. But that got me to thinking, Steve. Who could use Cam Thomas? Who are some teams that could use Cam Thomas? And I ended up tweeting yesterday.
You have a list, don't you? You have a list. There's no way you don't. You have a list. Oh, what's the list? Come on, Steve,
who would I be if I didn't have a list? And so I had two tiers very quickly on the Cam Thomas front. The should reach out tier, or claim them off waivers if they're able to do so, if that salary situation allows it. I mentioned, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Steve. So in this first tier, the Denver Nuggets, Indiana Pacers, the Milwaukee Bucks, who are loosely linked to Cam Thomas, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Toronto Raptors. Would any of those teams move you as a Cam Thomas suitor?
Here's my issue with that list. Give it to me more time. Okay. Denver? No, absolutely not. They should not do that.
Okay. No, the Indiana Pacers.
You just got rid of Bennedict Mathurin. No.
Exactly.
No.
the Milwaukee Bucks.
Maybe. But no.
Okay. Maybe on the... Oh, well, never mind then. All right. The Philadelphia 76ers.
Absolutely not. You're in a good place.
And the Toronto Raptors.
No. You have enough tween hezzy.
Okay. All right. And these are the teams that at least should have a meeting about it. If you end up with no, that's fine. If you end up with yes, that's fine. But have a meeting. The Boston Celtics, the Detroit Pistons, the Houston Rockets, the Orlando Magic.
Celtics intrigues me because you just got rid of Anthony Simons. What's the next one? But they have tax things. Who's the next team?
The Detroit Pistons.
No, absolutely not. We are the one seed. No, thank you.
Okay. The Houston Rockets.
The Houston Rockets? No. Mm-hmm. No. We take too long to set up our things in the half court. We don't need that right now.
And the Orlando Magic, who I guess if they sign Javon Carter, that probably makes them a no by default. But should they at least have a meeting about adding some scoring to the second unit?
A text thread, maybe?
Okay. So we land with Milwaukee was a maybe, but no. But a maybe for Milwaukee. Boston intrigues you, but they have the tax stuff. So that would just have to naturally be a later signing if it's going to be that. And the Orlando Magic. Those are kind of the three. Is there any other team that would intrigue you with Cam Thomas?
Can Miami do it?
That would be... a roster with Norm Powell, Tyler Hero, and Cam Thomas would drive me... Hey, well. Up this wall behind me.
Hey, we don't need pick and roll. We need buckets. The Clippers. What about the Blazers?
Blazers are interesting. If we say, hey, we just need somebody else that can get buckets, so Denny doesn't have to do all of this, and Shaden doesn't have to do all of this. Indrique. But okay, so those are the two or three that you would add to the list. Understood. But yeah, it just kind of felt for like the Brooklyn contingent that got waived as they were dealing with the post all-star stuff, like Oshai Obagi's in with a second round pick, etc. Which Oshai defending in Brooklyn intrigues me. Oshai on offense, we'll see what that looks like, much like we saw with the Toronto Raptors this year. But we shall see. Any other losers you want to sort through, Steve, before we move?
No, I'm all good. We can keep it, okay. Keep it pushing.
Okay, well then last thing for me. The Sacramento Kings, you get out of this deadline with no Sabonis deal, no DeMar DeRozan deal, no Zach LaVine deal. I understand it's going to be difficult with LaVine. I understand not wanting to take on Jakob Poeltl money in a Sabonis deal, and third teams just didn't want to do that without pick allocation. So, like, that part really isn't your fault. Not being able to do anything with DeMar, even if that is, like, salary plus seconds, that just feels odd. Like, bringing all three of them back post-deadline just feels like a bit of a miss to me. We'll see what DeAndre Hunter looks like. And then the Houston Rockets. not doing anything is at least is a little bit of a surprise for me. I figured they would at least try to do something with like the second unit. Let's move some deck chairs. Let's move one of these forwards for like a guard that can shoot. Like that would be helpful. But I think more than anything, I am just concerned with the Houston Rockets. We just did a full blown break to cut that episode if you haven't already. I'm not saying anything new there. That offense is in a really bad place right now. For a lot of the reasons that we talked about and things that they have to work through, that offense is in a terrible place. The vibes seem worse. I don't like what I'm seeing from Alperen Şengün right now. I don't like what I'm hearing from Alperen Şengün right now. We'll also sprinkle that in there. But, like, this is just odd. And it's kind of – add a guard, maybe. Like, that part's weird. We'll have Rockets all down the line. But that – yeah.
I thought we had MVP candidate Alperen Şengün.
We sure don't. We sure don't. It's deeply unfortunate. Deeply unfortunate. All right, Steve. Let's move to the unrivaled slate to close things out. We have a fun slate of games. No games on Sunday. Naturally, we've got Super Bowl Sunday. But we do have Friday, Saturday, and Monday. And these matchups, particularly the Saturday slate, but if we roll through it, on Friday or later on tonight, we have the Hive taking on the Breeze. We have the Lunar Isles taking on the Laces. I am intrigued of those two more so by Laces and Lunar Isles. We are, again, a week removed from Marina maybe scoring all of the baskets, and then in the next game maybe not getting all of the baskets, but there's still just a gravity that she has offensively. Her versus Brittany Sykes, or her versus Jackie Young, or her versus Jordan Canada, whenever their minutes match. Like, how Marina deals with those guards is going to be interesting. How the Laces decide to allocate their defenders in general, when you add in the fact that Skylar Diggins is back and is in full swing, that should just be a fun matchup for me. And, hey, if we get Aaliyah Edwards, Alyssa Thomas, I'm here for those one-on-one matchups, which is going to lead to like some one-on-one thoughts a little bit later. But I'm kind of here for that one, Steve. It's a nightcap, but I think that's going to be the best matchup of Friday.
I think the competitive nature of Lunar Isles against Laces is going to be very fun to watch, with Marina Mabry doing what she's done with Skylar Diggins back, but also the Laces are built on competition. They are number one because of Alyssa Thomas not messing around, Brittany Sykes not messing around, Jackie Young not messing around. So what gives in that matchup? Either way, it's going to be a back and forth. Some intrigue there. When it comes to Hive and Breeze, feels like Hail Mary when it comes to the Hive. Can the Breeze take care of business? Because I think the Hive are an interesting team because they can annoy you for up to three quarters. Can you handle being annoyed for three quarters and put yourself in a spot to where you can win in the fourth? Or are you going to be in one of these back and forths and now, oh my gosh, we're in danger? And the Breeze have found themselves in that position a few times as a young team to where it's like, all right, we're grooving. Oh, this third quarter got interesting. Oh, we're in a dogfight. So that, I think there's a competitive nature to Hive Breeze that could get very interesting.
No, I like that. And I'd say just quickly on that front before we move to the other matchups, like Kelsey Mitchell, one, she's just incredibly good at basketball because duh. Mm-hmm. But like, I think the way that she scores could pose very specific problems for the perimeter defenders that the Breeze have. With Paige, with Kate Martin when she's in. Rekia Jackson has taken on some tough assignments, which, going back to last week, her work against Chelsea Gray was very intriguing to me. Like, I think she did a really good job. But, like, Kelsey Mitchell being as quick twitch as she is with her drives, and then there's also, like, the bob and weave. I'll toss it to my big and then cut one way, juke the other way, and I can go and I can get downhill to meet. Like, she can just test those players in particular in very specific ways. I'm curious to see what that looks like. And as much as I think we have both enjoyed what Dominique Malanga and Cam Brink have been able to do this season, when they are matched up with Monique Billings, like, I think those two are better. But the drives and the motor on the offense glass in particular, like, I think they can poke at Dom and Cam Brink in very specific ways. So, like, to your overall point, this could be a weird matchup for the Breeze. They can't overlook them because this could become a dogfight very quickly. And that's for getting into Citron coming off of a career high. Saniah Rivers has been insane defensively. So if she's matched up with Paige at all, like, that should be appointment viewing too. Like, there's some stuff in this matchup despite the record disparity. As we get to Saturday, Steve, we get the 5-6 matchup in terms of standings with Rose and Vinyl. Last week, I was like, hey, what's going on with this Vinyl offense? Earlier this week, I was like, hey, what's going on with the Rose? Vinyl on a bit of a streak. Can the Rose get right? Can the Vinyl continue their winning ways? That should be interesting. This should be a physical battle. A lot of switching is going to be happening in this one. We'll see what the guards do. And Phantom Miss, Your second ranked Phantom at 6-3. The Mist also 6-3. They're third in the standings right now. It was a 3-point win for the Phantom the last time they matched up. It was a 2-point win for the Rose last time they matched up with the Vinyl. These matchups are going to be fascinating. The defense that any of these teams, I guess sans Rose, because I do still just have some concerns there. It should be some interesting half-court battles between these two. What excites you about these, Steve?
It's going to be interesting because both these teams played, they all play each other early in the season, and they're all in different positions. And so if you're the Vinyl, I'm looking at the Rose like, ooh, y'all here with us now? It's time to strike, especially when we look at how Ray Burrell has played offensively. De'Aaron Hamby can always get going. Ryan Howard and Brittany Griner, you never know what's going to happen there. Courtney Williams still went on the big game. But if I'm the Vinyl, it's like, oh, we've gotten ourselves into a position where we're a little bit more right than we were earlier. Are you prepared to deal with that? And then Mist Phantom is interesting because for the Mist, there are the games where it's like, ooh, can they score? I'm not sure they can score in this game. And then with the Phantom, it's like, ooh, can they guard? I'm not sure if they're guarding this game. And those two going head-to-head is intriguing as far as which one of those things is going to win out. I feel like the Mist can throw so many things at the Phantom to take away, okay, the post-ups, we can switch, we can take away the drives. But also the Phantom can just be like, well, we're going to compete and get after it and drive anyways, and we can make shots, and Kelsey Plum's a bucket, and you got to deal with Kiki, you got to deal with Leah Boston. So it's Phantom-Mist is probably my favorite matchup of the weekend.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. That is the appointment viewing for me of the ones that we've talked about so far. A repeat point for those who follow our coverage during Unrivaled, but what coverages does Kelsey Plum see in this basketball game is going to be top of mind for me. The Mist can throw a bunch of different defenders at her. They can also throw a bunch of different coverages at her. And I'm curious to see what that part looks like. Like, how often do we see Breanna Stewart switch on to Kelsey Plum, for example? If she's able to get a stop, now you're talking about a cross match going the other way in this format. Like, it can get funky in this particular game. But then on Monday, we got Vinyl versus Phantom. We got Rose versus Mist. Similar questions for me. Like, hey, teams have gotten more comfortable putting length on Chelsea Gray. We are switching. And if she's not making A-plus passes all the time, it turns into a whole lot of self-creation for their bigs. To your point that you made earlier this week, Steve, Shakira Austin has been up for the challenge. But if you were relying on Shakira to give you 25 every night, I don't know if that's a fair ask for her, even in this format. And the Mist can throw a lot of different looks. So intrigued to see what that offense-defense battle is going to look like. And with Vinyl Phantom, oh boy. Oh boy, these bigs, I'm sure at some point, if we can be respectfully messy for like 15 seconds, at some point we're going to get Brittany Griner or Leah Boston again. I just want to see what those post-ups look like. I just want to see what those are like. Do we get out of this clean? Do we get another whistle, go back to your benches, we hanging for 5 minutes, now let's get back to basketball? Let's just see what that part's going to look like. But those should be good. Anything top of mind for you with the Monday matchups, Steve?
No, I think you nailed the Monday. It's going to be interesting again because those four teams play Saturday, Monday. And so there's a chance for you to rise up if you were the Vinyl or the Rose. There's a chance for you to fall. So it's going to be interesting to see who wins the first Saturday matchup and then what that does for Monday.
There we go. As you've mentioned before, and I'll say it now, the top six teams in the standings make the playoffs, and then we're getting as jumbled as it is. These games are really starting to matter. But then we hit a little bit of a break next week, Steve, as the 1v1 tournament is on the way. Fans had the opportunity to vote for what they want the seedings to be. This season, a change from last year, they have position-specific player pods. Last year, it was just a mixture of folks, so that's where you got. Aaliyah Edwards is facing a guard. Chelsea Gray is facing a big in the one-on-one matchup, so we do just have more guard versus guard, wings versus wings, forwards versus forwards, et cetera, et cetera. So the fans got to vote this week. We will be getting those results officially tomorrow, so we can react to those on the Tuesday show next week. Steve, I got a media vote again this year, and so I got to try to cycle through what I want these matchups to look like. And last year we had this conversation, and I was like, ooh, I don't know. I think you posed the question to me, like, how much are you balancing who are just the best one-on-one players in each pod versus getting matchups that make sense because the pool was mixed. You could have guards facing bigs, et cetera, et cetera. Didn't have to factor that into the calculus this year. It was just very much, okay, how rate these players in a one-on-one setting? And so I am here to reveal my vote.
Okay, where'd you go? Where'd you go with this bird? All right. I'm very intrigued. So,
with Pod A, the matchups would be as follows. We'd have Kelsey Mitchell your 1 seed, taking on Rachel Badham as the 8 seed. You'd have Kelsey Plum, the 2 seed, taking on Natisha Hydeman, the 7 seed. The 3-6 matchup would be Skylar Diggins as the 3 seed, Veronica Burton as your 6 seed. And the 4-5 matchup would be Courtney Williams. She'd be 4. Jordan Canada at 5.
Okay.
I think we can.
I'm fine with this. A little surprised Kelsey Plum was the 2 seed in this and not the 3 seed. But I respect what you've done in Pod A. Very intrigued to hear Pod B. Very intrigued to hear Pod B.
Pod B had me for a loop. I'm going to be honest with you. And quickly to the Kelsey matchup, like that is what I spent the most time on in Pod A. Because I had an iteration where Kelsey Plum was the 1 seed, Kelsey Mitchell was the 2 seed. A little bit more size with Kelsey Mitchell, and thus if she's facing like one of the bigger guards, that's where I felt a little bit more comfortable there. That was the slight edge I gave. But like if you have Kelsey Plum with the 1 seed, I'm not upset at that at all. Like I think it's more fair.
I'm gonna try and do a thing. I'm gonna try and guess some things. Pod B gets interesting because between Arike, Chelsea Gray, Jackie Young, Paige, and Sykes, one of those is gonna be a 5 seed. That 4-5 is gonna be pretty nasty. I imagine that you have Kate Martin as the 8 and Tip Hayes as the 7. So I'm intrigued to hear what you go with. Go ahead, Nikias. Get ISO him.
Oh, ISO him. That is crazy. All right, the matchups I have, Steve. Your 1-8 matchup is Paige Beckers and Kate Martin. So you had the 8 seed. Mm-hmm. 7 matchup is Jackie Young and Natasha Cloud. The 3-6 matchup I have is Chelsea Gray and Tiffany Hayes. And the 4-5 matchup I have is Brittany Sykes and Arike Ogunbowale.
Wow. You had Arike 5, huh?
Indeed. Well, it was funny like thinking through Arike because I was anywhere between 2 through 5 with her. Because with the scoring, like she can just get baskets on anyone. She can make contested jumpers, can take deep pull-ups, can get to the basket. But then it's like, ooh. If those shots don't fall, that gets tough. And also, like, she is just the smallest guard of the bunch. And it's like, okay, well, efficiency size would drop her down. But, like, she very could just win this pod, to be very clear about that. But that's where I landed on that front. And then just trying to cycle through Paige versus Jackie versus Chelsea. You know what also threw me for a loop just overall before I get back in the pod, see? Trying to figure out, like, how much to account for what happened last year in this year's tournament. Because, like, Jackie was there, but she was hurting and ultimately didn't finish. And, like, it was just like, this is weird. Like, the matchups are super weird, and they're playing at different stages. It's been, like, a year worth of growth or whatever. It was just odd. So I end up, like, not factoring that in, like, too much until we get to Pod D, but we'll get there. But we can now move to Pod C, Steve.
The 1-8 matchup. What are you going to do here? Alisha Gray, Marina Mabry, Ryan Howard, Rikia Jackson? Oh, my. This is probably your favorite pod, huh?
It like the wing slash forward group, there's some stuff in here, Steve. But the 1-8 matchup for me, Alisha Gray and Saniya Rivers. And like if I felt more comfortable about Saniya as a scorer, she would really be a dark horse for me in this because she can guard anybody, man.
Okay.
And teams just not going to have fun dealing with that. But, like, the self-creation, like, there have been flashes heading to the second half of the W season. She's shown some stuff during this unrivaled season. But, like, compared to everyone else, I was like, I can't really do that. So, Alisha Gray, Saniya Rivers is my 1-8. Kalia Copper and Sonya Citron is my 2-7. Ryan Howard, Ray Burrell is my 3-6. Rikia Jackson, Marina Mabry is my 4-5.
So, you had Marina Mabry, unrivaled record holder as far as most points in a game as the 5 seed in this pod.
Listen, there's some screens set in that 47-point performance. You don't get those in 1-on-1. But no, it was more so the defense for me with Marina than anything, because obviously she can get all kinds of baskets. Mm. And so that's where she slid a little bit. Kyle obviously can get to the basket a ton. Ryan was the person, honestly, between Ryan and Rikia, it ended up being a late swap for me because I'm just like, on one hand, like Rikia does just have like the mid-range game and the post-ups and stuff like that. But also like Ryan can run so hot from three is where I'm just like, ooh, I didn't know what to do with that. And then Ryan is just a better defender than Rikia Jackson. So that's how I ended up with Ryan 3, Rikia 4. But like, there's some stuff there. And as you mentioned, Marina can get all of the baskets, but smaller than the rest, defensive questions in this format. We will see what that part looks like. So there's my pod C. And then we get into pod D.
Oh, I'm about to say, I'm trying to figure out what you did with Pod D, because Pod D is the bigs. And so I imagine, and this is my guess, that this pod featuring Aaliyah Edwards, Aaliyah Boston, Alyssa Thomas, Lee Yarbrough, De'Erica Hamby, Dominic Malanga, may have had you in a headlock. It was. Am I correct with my assessment?
It sure did. And I end up with like preparing statements where I'm just like, hey, I think this player is better than this one. But in a 1v1 format, I don't know what this is going to look like. So the 1-8 for me is Breanna Stewart, Lee Yarbrough. And I say that with the caveat that if Lee Yarbrough just posts up everybody and makes her jump hooks, this could get funny very quickly. But she is the 8 seed premier. So we get Stewie, we get Lee Yarbrough. The 2-7 is Aaliyah Edwards and Alyssa Thomas.
Wow.
Yeah, and I don't feel great about that. Like, Alyssa Thomas, as you are well aware, long-term dogs are aware, like, Alyssa Thomas is just a top five player in the league for me and has been for a while. Legitimate MVP candidate, legitimate DPOY candidate, et cetera, et cetera. If there's a thing to poke at with Alyssa Thomas, it is going to be the scoring package, in the shooting overall, but the scoring package. And she is just in a pod with a bunch of players that are taller than her.
Wow.
And so, like, I think she can get stops versus literally anyone because she is one of the best defenders in the league, if not the best defender in the league. She has to score enough to win this tournament. I just don't know. Am I going to be super surprised if AT runs through this with a bunch of post-ups and checks into the chest and getting push-shots? Wouldn't be super surprised. But trying to project forward, like, I had to have her lower because I didn't know what that part was going to look like. We didn't get to see her last year. And Aaliyah Edwards, there was some cross-matching last year if we're talking about the tournament. But as we've seen in this unrivaled season, like, there is just a level of off the dribble juice that she has compared to some of these other bigs that I'm intrigued by. And so she ends up getting 2 for me. My 3-6 is Aaliyah Boston and Dominique Malanga. Now, again, Boston a better player than Edwards, but like the one-on-one stuff in this format, I feel a little bit more comfortable with Aaliyah Edwards does. But Aaliyah versus Dom is interesting. Does Dom knock down all the turnaround jumpers? Is Aaliyah Boston able to just move Dom Malanga because of the difference in body types? Like, that could be a fun one. And then the 4-5, similar bit, De'Erica Hamby and Shakira Austin. All of the drives, fun footwork. We're going to see what that looks like. That would probably be my favorite matchup of the pod. If we end up getting this as a standings. Now, I'm just one of many media votes, and we see how the fans factor in and all the good stuff, so I don't know. But that is how I have it set up, Steve. How did I do?
Two thumbs up.
Okay.
Well done, Mikhail. Great job.
I will take that. And with that, we'll take this into the weekend, Steve. We can get on out of here. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. You can catch me on socials at Nikias NBA. You can catch Steve on socials at Steve Jones 20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.